Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Terry Foy, and this is The Reflex. Today, we're looking back at the crazy weekend that was in college lacrosse. We are back for our third week, and I hope you enjoy what you've heard so far. If you have, please subscribe to Inside Lacrosse Podcasts on iTunes. Download and leave a rating. We always appreciate that. Tweet or post the link to the podcast on Facebook. If you want to get involved, feel free to email me, tfoy@insidelacrosse.com. Let's dive into the games. We'll talk to Pete Koutrompas, who was on hand in Durham and Chapel Hill for a pair of home team victories over the weekend. North Carolina's, of which I mistakenly ID'd as an overtime game, but instead it was just a 59-minute and 57-second shootout that featured the Tar Heels coming out by one, coming out on top by one against the Princeton Tigers. And on Friday night, Duke took down the defending national champions. We'll also talk to Carolyn Darney, who is on hand in Charlottesville, to see the Virginia Cavaliers fall by a goal to the Cornell Big Red, who are up to the number 2 in this week's Inside Lacrosse Nike Media Poll. First, we're going to start with a rare opportunity. Lehigh hung on to beat Penn State 12-10 at the Whitman Sampler Independence Classic on Saturday. It was a big W for the 4-3 Mountain Hawks. Zach Babbo mic'd up coach Kevin Cassis. Be sure to check out his all-access video later in the week on iltelevision.com. But he was in the locker room pregame. What follows is Cassis' speech to his team in its entirety, and it's an interesting glimpse not just of what goes on in a locker room pregame, but how those small moments of honest communication can impact the team and impact a program.
Okay, here is, you know, my state of the union for where we're at as a program. All right, let's face it. Right at this point, all right, we're coming to a halfway point in our season. All right, so after tonight, we're gonna be halfway done. All right, so let me tell you about where we are right now, and let me tell you more importantly about where we're going. All right, and we'll focus more on that. The last thing I said to you guys this morning before we left the locker room was I really want to win this game. All right, I think I used some choice words in there too, but you guys get the point. I really want to win this game. All right, and I want you guys to really want to win this game too. And I think this is what is my opinion of what has been happening for us for this group. All right, and this is my pulse of the team. I think this is the deal here. So I think that, you know, we've spent a lot of time dwelling on the past, okay? We've spent a lot of time dwelling on the past, and we've spent a lot of time concerned about our future, okay? And in the meantime, what we have forgotten about is the present, okay? I wholeheartedly believe about that. I wholeheartedly believe that, that we have, you know, seriously, it's been dwelling on the past. We've all been doing it, myself included. I'm the number one culprit, all right? And then, you know, we're concerned about the future. All right, where are we going to be at the end of the year? All right, you know, we have it in our locker room. It's sitting right there. All right, that was my choice. Okay, and I'm not saying you shouldn't have goals. We should all have goals, and we should have a mission. All right, but we have adjusted our focus from today, and that's what we've done. Okay, so for today, we're just going to focus on today. All right, that's it. All right, this is the only game on our schedule, and that's the way that we're going to treat it today. All right, this is our championship game. All right, this is the only thing that we're worried about. And that's what we have to do. We have to focus. All of the hard work, all right, the blood, the sweat, the tears, all right, that this family has endured, all right, think about the fall, all right, think about all the things that we're doing, the early mornings, all right, the speed sessions with Eric, you know, he barking down your neck, all right, the stadiums, the program, all that stuff, all right, we forgot about that. All right, we need to put that into today. We need to use that to help us win this game today because this is going to be our championship game. All right, we need to make all the small plays today. All the small plays today is what we need to make. And then at the end of the game, we can then look back at them and say, you know what? Those are really big plays in the game. All right, that's what we did today. You guys, you saw yourselves doing it. All right, we sat there and watched 25 clips of you guys making the small plays, the right plays. Fellas, there was nothing miraculous in there, all right? There was nothing miraculous. There was nothing heroic. It was just small plays, all right? Those small plays led to three huge program non-conference wins. That's what they led to. And it was just a mindset. It was just a mindset. It was being able to look at it and say, I am going to lay everything on the line today, all right? I'm going to make every small play as if it's the last play that I will ever make. All right, and if you do that, All right, you're going to be successful. I guarantee it. All right, fellas, you work too hard. You're far too talented to not be successful. I really believe that. All right, so that's what I'd like to do today. I'd really like to focus on this game, on the small plays, and truly celebrate those small plays for one another. All right, we talk about that a lot, but we haven't really done it yet. All right, this is a great opportunity for us to do that. I'm really looking forward to us, you know, getting after it. Fellas, you know how to make the plays. All right, I'm just looking down here at this list. All right, you're talking about ground balls. You're talking about face-offs. All right, you're talking about shots. You're talking about hits. All right, you're talking about slides. All right, you're talking about saves. You're talking about all the little things that you guys have been coached to do and that you guys have been basically bred to do since Little League lacrosse. You guys know how to make those plays. If you didn't, you wouldn't be sitting here in this room right now. I guarantee it. All right, so that's all I'm asking you guys to do. And if you just direct all of your attention to those little things, I guarantee you, fellas, you'll find success and you'll win the championship today. All right, I guarantee it. All right, you have to start with one. All right, let's direct our attention to one. All right, these four quarters today, all right, is all I'm asking you guys to look at. All right, and every time we come back together, we look at each other in the eye and we say, how are we doing? We doing good or not so good? All right, and we should be able to say that and then be able to hold ourselves accountable to it. All right, we're doing well. Let's keep it going. Fellas, we're not doing well. Let's pick it up. All right, and we look at each other and we make the decision to do that. All right, the family needs to come together today. All right, I believe that it will. I do. I believe it will. All right, I trust in you guys. I know you guys trust in us as coaches. I believe that. I can see it in your eyes. All right, and more importantly, we all trust in each other. All right, this is an opportunity for us to really dial it in, all right, to really focus here on what's important, which is the here and now, which is the today. All right, let's live in the present, and let's go get these guys. Let's go. Right here, boys, bring it up.
Let's go.
Let's go, boys. Let's go. New
journey starts today, boys. Let's go. Fellas, last thing for you, all right? If you lay it all on the line, I guarantee you will not be sorry. All right, lay it all on the line, and you will not be sorry. Let's play hard. Let's play well. Hawks on three. 1, 2, 3.
Hawks!
And the Inside Lacrosse Reflex podcast continues with Carolyn Darney, who was on hand for Cornell's 12-11 win over Virginia in Charlottesville this past weekend. It was an amazing comeback for the Big Red, a significant win for a team that was facing its first test of the early season so far. And Carolyn, you know, just a nice atmosphere in Klockner Stadium under the lights, you know, pitting two top teams together and certainly the Purnell brothers, as an interesting sidebar storyline. I guess just a quick rundown of what the events kind of seemed like and how, much, you know, of a kind of late season vibe this game had.
Yeah, it was definitely a great matchup. Always expect good things coming out of a matchup between Cornell and Virginia. Cornell hadn't won at Klockner, I think, in about 4 or 5 trips, something like that. So definitely a big game for Cornell coming out there with a win. Klockner is arguably one of the best places to play in college lacrosse these days. You know, real grass, always taken care of. And with the lights, huge crowd for it being spring break weekend starting off, but not a lot of students, a lot of fans coming out from Charlottesville. There was a baseball game competing for attention from fans. So I think the biggest crowd that Klockner's had so far this season, it was rocking. The band was there. It was definitely had a definite late season feel to it, as you said. The crowd is very into it from the get-go, involved, watching every play, oohing and aahing at all the right times, cheering when they needed to, and that sort of stuff. So it was a great atmosphere. Not a great outcome for the home team and the faithful that were present, but definitely an exciting night.
And you mentioned a quick turning point in the middle of the third quarter after Virginia extended their lead to 4 goals to go ahead 9-5. Cornell reels off 6 of the next 7. Faceoffs were a big key. Rob Pinnell coming alive was another big key. What were your thoughts on just how that tide shifted in the third quarter?
There was definitely a marked change between the way Cornell was playing before that point and after that point. I don't know what drove them at that point to, you know, maybe it was the fourth goal getting scored, momentum swinging towards Virginia's side, but ground balls, all the 50-50 balls were going to Cornell. They were hustling, they were playing hard. Rob Pinnell really finally seemed to get comfortable, which was something that he didn't seem to do at all in the first half, really. The defense, you have to give him credit for Virginia, especially Tanner Scales, played an outstanding game, especially as a freshman defender. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Brett Hughes mixed with Mike Culver out there. He's a physical player, he's a smart player. ended up with three cause turnovers against Pinnell. But Rob just eventually got settled. He's a great player. You can see, you can almost see the gears moving as he plays, as he's watching everything develop. And he had, I think, three assists or four assists after that point and a goal. Just really came to life and took charge of that offense, because that's what he's there to do. And having someone like Steve Mock, who finished the last play of the game to score the goal to go ahead, just both very intelligent lacrosse players, and they play the game well.
And I want to come back to that game winner, but, you know, first, with 39 seconds to go, a moment for Virginia, having caused a turnover, getting the ball back, and Rob Emery scoring his second goal of the game, 12th goal of the season, to tie it at 11, like I said, 39 seconds to go. Can you just kind of run through that goal and, you know, what you feel like the implications are, even though, you know, Virginia didn't come away with a win, they still have to be pleased with the way that they responded down the stretch.
Right, absolutely. It was a great defensive stand, getting the ball out of the defensive end. They were pretty good on clears all day. I think they only messed up two clears, and 22 of 24 on clears. But Rob Emery, I've never seen him move with such a purpose, such authority. He put the jets on and just on the fly let it go and put that shot away. And there was no doubt, I don't think, in anybody's mind in that stadium at that point, that goal was going to go in. And it's really a testament to Coach Sargent has a lot of faith in Rob, I think, as a, you know, Rob Emery is a leader on that midfield, on that first midfield, and his abilities as a leader and a player. It definitely will help them going forward, knowing that, sure, maybe the outcome wasn't exactly what they wanted, but I think something that they can take away from it is they responded, they scored, they put together a good drive there, and it's something that, you know, next time the faceoff is really the big thing that got him in that fourth quarter, winning only 1-7, and that was the last one of the quarter when they had 13 seconds left, so not enough time to respond on that one. But I think it's definitely something they can build off of, because it showed it was a moment of clarity as to what this team could be going down the stretch.
And you mentioned, you know, the faceoff woes, so to speak, and that reared its head in a pretty dramatic way as Cornell was able to win a faceoff and score with 13 seconds to go to get the lead and go up 12-11. What were your thoughts on the final goal?
It was a great play by Cornell. I mean, they did exactly what they needed to. The defense looked like they were stuck kind of between a man and zone setup, because they've been switching off and on through the third and fourth quarter. And I think Rob Bunnell had it behind the goal, where he's so comfortable with it and looks just so at ease with it, and was able to, you know, he draws a lot of attention. And when he got that second defender coming around, paying him attention, was able to find Steve Mock. Again, like I said, just a fantastic player. I think he had two goals and his first assist of the season, too, so he's probably pretty excited about that. But was able to put it away there on the doorstep. And it was a very efficient and very successful play. It was one that was drawn up well and executed perfectly.
And then finally, you know, the last week the storyline was coming out of the Syracuse game. Virginia learns from the Syracuse game, win or lose. They always reinvent themselves and become a different team going forward. And, you know, here a week on, they, you know, struggle against Vermont, but at the same time, you know, put in a game effort against a team that, you know, has a very strong claim for being the best team in the country, despite all of what Maryland has done as well. What was Don's thoughts post-game, and, you know, what do you see out of this team as they prepare for a tough stretch in the near term?
Yeah, Coach Sargent mentioned, you know, like, there's always those little things that you look at every play in a game like this where, you know, one play could sway back or forth what was going to happen in that game. Coming up, they have Virginia has a very big stretch of, you know, Ohio State and then Hopkins and then right into the ACC schedule. So Maryland, Carolina, Duke, all in succession, which will be a definite test. Big thing coming in for them this weekend against Ohio State is just to come out ready to play after this tough loss. Look to rebound. We'll see what happens there. Chris LaPierre should be shut down for this one, but there might be a chance that he plays. Who knows at this point? He's still not, you know, there's no red shirt this time sort of thing, but we'll see that kind of spark that he can provide when he's at his full potential as well. So it'll be interesting to see how they move forward from this one. A lot of little things, those 50-50 balls, I'm sure will be a big focus on in practice this week.
Excellent. Well, Carolyn, fantastic summation. I apologize. This is our second take as it, as we had some technical difficulties, but it was good because you didn't include the Brett Hughes, Mike Culver comparison in the first one. So I'm sure that the Scales family will be happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us on the Reflex Podcast, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again down the road.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse Reflex podcast continues with Pete Koutrompis, Inside Lacrosse blogger who was on scene for both Duke's win over Loyola on Friday night and North Carolina's overtime victory over Princeton on Saturday. Pete, let's start in Chapel Hill, an overtime game where the Tar Heels, it was amazing offensive outburst, 99 shots among the two teams. I guess just can you talk about the pace and the tempo and how this game turned into the shootout that it ultimately became?
Sure. Actually, Terry, I'm going to have to correct you. It didn't even get to overtime. That's what Carolina did. They wanted to avoid going into triple overtime like they did against Notre Dame the week before. So actually, the pace had started well right from the beginning. Princeton took an early lead, 3-0, and then Carolina came back scoring on a run there to take a lead. And basically, Carolina and Princeton back and forth kept the pace up. It seemed like the new rules, and in talking with Joe Brushy afterwards, that the new rules and the restarts and anything about moving the ball before getting to a stall warning was key. And believe it or not, 99 shots, and there wasn't one stall warning called at all during the whole game.
That's amazing, and obviously, a huge part of that offense, at least on the Carolina side, started from their attack. They combined for 16 points. Talking with Quinn Kesnick last week, on the heels of the Princeton Johns Hopkins game, he pointed out that he was pretty confident that he felt like North Carolina's attack was going to be able to have a distinct advantage against this Princeton defense. How'd you see that matchup shaking out, and particularly with the way that they were able to move the ball, 10 assists among Sankey, Bitter, and Holman? What were your thoughts on just how North Carolina's attack was able to carry the day for their offense?
Yeah, well, actually, give credit to the Princeton defense early on. They played a tight man zone, so to speak, that kept a perimeter of about 12 to 14 yards out from goaltender O'Connor. And it took Carolina a little bit. Basically, Carolina didn't get their first goals until about 3 minutes left, just over 3 minutes left in the first quarter, and then they scored a flurry of four of them in 2 minutes. So took them a little while, so credit to the Princeton defense, but part of that was that they were probably a little tight and apprehensive considering what they had gone through against Notre Dame. But, yeah, once they started flowing and getting the passing and the ball movement going, that they were able to score goals, not space them out. They were one after the other, and that's what caught Princeton off guard at that point.
And so, with the Tigers being able to kind of bounce back a little bit, what would you put, the onus on or the turning point on in terms of their ability to kind of battle back?
Well, once Carolina got that initial lead, they actually never lost it, but the teams tied six times throughout the game. And then until the last 2 minutes, that's when Princeton took a 15-14 lead. And basically both teams were just going back and forth. At the X was important for Carolina in the second half. Princeton had taken advantage of some face-off opportunities and getting into transition early on and keeping it close. And again, Princeton, Schreiber and McDonald were shooting the lights out from, inside of 8 to 12 yards and keeping Princeton close. So it was just one of those types of games where they weren't playing overly tight defense, but the offenses on both sides were definitely kicking.
One thing I noticed about the faceoff numbers was that Princeton got called for 5 violations, which stands out to me as I think the most I've seen since they started tracking that stat this year. Was that I saw that they had one penalty in the first half. Was that a big part of the game that you noticed?
A little bit. In between the lines, they would keep possession. Both teams would keep possession for anywhere from a minute, minute and a half, up to two and a half minutes. And basically just the turnover situations in between the lines for the ground balls. The faceoff violations weren't as a big a deal in terms of, going right to the transition right away on many goals. But they did sort of stand out on the stat sheet, but those particular violations didn't make as much a difference as transition goals after losing the ball with possession.
And then just to kind of wrap up this one, what were kind of the most significant comments that you took away from talking to both coaches and other folks after the game?
Well, obviously, Carolina needed this win just for their sanity after what had gone on at Notre Dame. It was a very emotional, bone-crushing loss to them at Notre Dame. And just to win it the way they did, again, they tied it with 37 seconds left. And then they won it with 3 seconds left on Chad Tutton's bounce shot that beat O'Connor. So the emotion of being behind by a goal, facing the potential, hey, let's just tie it to go into overtime, and then to win it before regulation ended was a big boost and just a relief. But I'll tell you, the 4,300-plus people in attendance plus the players were riding on a very high level of emotion, and they were very happy to get that win as they did. And it's a style of lacrosse they like to play. That's Joe Bresci basically said his team played not at 60 minutes, but they played 60-plus minutes in their minds, and that's what he's been trying to get his guys to do all season.
And on the Princeton side of things?
Princeton side of things, you know, is obviously a little bit more of a, you know, a tough loss with what they basically left it all out on the table on the field. It's just one of those types of games that, you know, that apparently is going on around the country, so they just have to bounce back and be ready for the next one.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit to Friday night. Loyola, defending national champions, really kind of spark-plugged in 2012 by their win over Duke in Baltimore, a win that I think validated and solidified their status as contenders across the country after they got off to a pretty good undefeated start. You know, turning around this year down in Durham, not getting the same result as Duke comes away with a 9-8 win. Again, a little bit of a comeback, you know, as Loyola led 5-4 after three quarters. Yeah, this wasn't necessarily the same type of up and down game, as it only featured 60 combined shots between the two teams. And for Loyola, that's a big thing, as Charlie Toomey has spoken at length on multiple occasions about how his team needs to get to 40 shots a game in order to be able to play their best. What were your thoughts on the way that this game unfolded?
Well, basically, Duke had made some adjustments in how they were working the ball. They actually seemed to be working and finding the corners and the seams of the Loyola defense first, and they generated more of their offense starting from in front of the cage or in front of goal line extended first, rather than relying on starting behind the cage, which is usually Jordan Wolf's initiating point. So by initiating their offense more in the front, it gave them a lot more ability to attack the seams in the Loyola defense, and that's where they started to really quickly just pinpoint and take advantage on Runkle from the outside, and then they started working inside. So that was important for Duke from Loyola's points. Execution was their main point that Coach Toomey was talking about. Basically, they knew what to expect, that they should expect a good game from Duke, but they also seem to have fallen short on some of their expectations defensively.
And, you know, one of the, I guess, kind of notable changes, Duke continuing to try to find an answer in goal, starting Kyle Turry. He made 9 saves. What were your thoughts on what he brought to the table?
Well, Turry made so many good saves when he needed to that gave a big boost to Duke's defense altogether. The reason why he was in goal was that Dan Wigreiser was injured during the week, apparently injuring a previous injury. And so he was on the sidelines in sweats. And so when we talked to Coach Janowski, he had pointed out that Wigreiser had been injured. So Turry was the goalkeeper of choice. And he came up with a big game when he needed to for Duke. And whether he continues to be in the cage, we'll see. I mean, obviously, you'd think you ride the hot hand, but you know, they've platooned goalies in the past, so they wouldn't be surprised if they go back and forth. But he was a big part of that win on Friday.
And then, you know, just to put a cap on this one a little bit, Loyola, you know, a team that obviously had tremendously high expectations, preseason number one, certainly have had their fair share of setbacks between off-the-field issues with Josh Hawkins' suspension highlighting the way so far, as well as, you know, two losses to you know, Duke and Maryland, who could, you know, by the end of the season end up being, you know, two really high quality losses, although the Duke one is a little bit more suspect right now. That being said, what was your sense of Loyola's attitude post game and how they'll apply the outcome going forward?
Well, let's put it this way. Coach Janowski said it, Coach Toomey echoed the same type of thing. It's still only March, and as Coach Timmy said, if this game defines who we are, then we're in trouble. Basically, both coaches, as well as others who've probably suffered losses right now, it's still early in the season, and many of them are developing their teams, their offenses, their defenses, to a point where they need to peak at the right time. And it's great that they can get good wins. At the same time, if they are losing, they're not they're moving past it. It's basically done, and they move on to the next game. So they're not dwelling on it.
Excellent. And while the Reflex Podcast is usually meant to look back to the weekend with a game on Wednesday, a big game affected by the results that we just finished talking about, Duke Carolina, the ESPNU Wednesday night game of the week, what are your thoughts on what you will be looking for as you blog this game for Inside Lacrosse?
Well, obviously, you're going to see two high-potent potential offenses going at one another. Duke's been a little bit slower at getting theirs churned up, but they definitely have firepower to put the ball in the net. And obviously, Carolina, that's a given. That's their priority and bread and butter. I will say that I think midi play is going to be very crucial for both teams. Face-offs, you're going to have R.G. Keenan going up against Brendan Fowler. So there's going to be a battle there, and almost like a chess match. But that particular part of the game may determine the winner of this one, and I wouldn't be surprised if it went to overtime. In goal, both teams are using and have platoon keepers. Kieran Burke, who was in goal for Carolina, actually was almost not going to start because he was sick. But he played a great game against Princeton and held his own. Whether Turry or Wigreiser, there's all of those possibilities. But just know both teams are ready to play. The emotional high for Carolina and Duke coming off big wins will only make Wednesday's excitement in the Triangle that much higher and more exciting. And I expect at least 4,000 to 6,000 people to be in attendance. So if they're not, I'd be shocked.
Well, Pete, thanks so much for that prediction, because that'll be awesome. It'll be a great atmosphere for fans to check out on TV, those that aren't in the Triangle. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, and I'm sure that we'll be talking to you again sometime soon.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.